What's going on, everybody? Welcome into a Tuesday edition of Texans All Access. I'm your host, John Harris, football analyst, sideline reporter. Plenty going on, not quite like yesterday, where we had the big five. We had a Tunsil extension. We had a Cooks trade. Mm-hmm. We had a Schultz signing. We had a Singletary signing. We had a Dieter signing. Whew, man, catch your breath. Well, kind of. It's still kind of free agent frenzy-ish, but it's slowing down. See, I thought it was going to slow to a crawl, Mark Vandermeer, but it just continues to go on.
Would you call it a frenzy? Would you call this a frenzy? I don't know what it is.
A flurry?
It's more than a flurry. It's probably less than a frenzy.
Yeah.
It's a lot of activity, though, for this team. Look, 2 years ago, when they were coming out of the abyss of 2020, and they kind of stayed in a different kind of abyss.
Yeah, right.
but remember when Nick got here, Nick's first offseason, right. He signed all these guys.
Right.
And he signed capable players and quality guys. This is obviously a cut above, right? With all due respect to
Schultz,
those guys.
Schultz, a Pro Bowler.
Yeah, some of those players were good. Some of these guys have potential to be great, right? And what they do for your team, especially now that you have some other assets and you add to them, running back, your backfield now, wow. You've got Damian Pierce and Devin Singletary, tight end group. We were talking about this right before the Schultz signing. What do they have here? They definitely need to add to it. Wow, they added Schultz. I know nothing. All right, is that too dated?
Way too dated.
How many people under 50 know that reference?
Nobody.
Sergeant Schultz?
Go look it up.
You know, Chris Berman's just dying to do that.
So this was my thought, and of course, it's interesting. My wife in L.A. and my son had gone to bed early. I was just kind of alone with my thoughts last night. Like, and I was thinking about this signing because when I saw it, I literally was coming out of the bathroom, grabbed my phone. What happened while I was in the bathroom? Oh, my gosh. The Texans have signed. Wait, does that say Texans and Dalton Schultz? Wait. Hold on. Is that Adnan Chardonnay? Is that Tom Pelissero? No. I mean, no. It was Texans signed Dalton Schultz. Texans signed Devin Singletary. And the overriding thought that came to my mind was there are other free agents looking at that going, oh,
what's going on over there?
I hadn't thought about the Texans for a few years. I hadn't thought about that. Or they've been kind of out of sight. Wait, they just signed Schultz? Man, they get Singletary too? And the 33rd team, which is kind of a draft GM NFL website. You know how these, like PFF will do this too. Potential Texans backfield, potential Jets skill players. All this kind of thing goes on, and they put up a graphic. So they put up a graphic yesterday, and at the top they had three. They had Damian Pierce and Devin Singletary on the outside. And then on the bottom they had Mechie, Woods, another player I'll get to in a second, and Schultz. The player in the middle of the top was Bryce Young. In the middle, the player down the bottom was Jordan Addison. So they're projecting the Texans taking Bryce at 2 and then taking Addison at 12.
How do you feel about that?
I looked at that, and you know the first thing I thought was? The guy who I walked in the building with on Tuesday morning was not on there. It was Nico Collins.
Yeah.
And a couple of commenters right after that said that. And, of course, then you got your Browns fans that are like, they got nothing. You know, what do they got? Well, that compared to what we've had.
It's a tremendous upgrade.
Night and day difference. And to see the 33rd team like recognize that.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying the 33rd team isn't, you know, whatever. But there are a lot of smart people at that site that have been around the league for a long time that look at that and go, there's something. And they put the little blue devil emoji, which I was told by the youngins that that's a good thing.
Yeah, oh, yeah, that's a good
thing.
Regular emoji, I thought, I was thinking logo. Yeah,
the
regular,
little purple devil emoji, that's a good thing, apparently.
Now, that's used for a variety of things, apparently.
Right, apparently.
In this context, it's a very positive football thing.
Yeah, so things have been moving in the right direction. But, as you noted, there's some things, and I actually wrote about this, there's some things happening against the 14 opponents the Texans have got to face this year as well, too.
Yeah, absolutely, Johnny. When we look at what the Texans have done so far, and clearly things are happening as we speak, right? But you look at the rest of the division. Let's start there. You did a daily brew on HoustonTexans.com. That's a daily column we have with various things thrown into it, but it's pretty cool stuff on the website. You should always check out the website for all of Johnny's stuff and Drew and DP and, you know, Johnny's breakdowns and things. But you talked about other teams on the Texans' schedule, most notably the division, and what they've done. And I think that when you look at what the Texans have done with their team, this is all pre-draft. We've got a long way to go. I get it. All right, draft is in a little over a month. But based on what they've done so far, who's better? I'm blending the segments here.
Yeah.
Who's done better for their team this offseason? I'll start here with the Indianapolis Colts because they hire Shane Steichen. Good for them.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people think they never should have gotten rid of Frank Reich, but it is what it is. Gardner Minshew joins the fray as a reserve quarterback.
Yep.
He's kind of their Case Keenum, right? Yep. We're going to draft a quarterback who we know we can play with, but we're also going to draft a quarterback. Did I say draft? I meant sign a quarterback we know we can play with, but we're also going to draft a quarterback. That's their thinking, I'm thinking. They've had some losses. They have some assets. They still have some assets on their team. But based on what they've done so far, defensive end Samson Ebukam.
It's a good move for them.
That's a good addition for them, yeah. What do you think about what they've done to improve their team versus what the Texans have done to improve their team?
Well, I think the Texans, obviously, in volume, they've attacked. I mean, if you think about what they've done, they've added two wide receivers. They've added presumably a starting right guard. Don't know about center yet. We'll see how that sort of plays out. They extended their Pro Bowl left tackle. They've added a bona fide number two weapon X in the backfield, presumably a starting tight end, depending on how you want to classify Dalton Schultz and where he lines up and all that kind of stuff. So that they've done all of that on the offensive side of the ball, and I don't think they're done. I think they draft a quarterback, and I think they end up adding another wide receiver. And here's the thing that's fascinating to me about the Texans is, and I heard Sean ask Seth this question, who would be the leading receiver on the Texans? That's usually a question that we have in the offseason when we get to slow down a little bit.
I've got an answer for you right now. Based on what we have on the squad right now, the leading receiver on the Texans.
Well, I want to rephrase the question for you.
All right,
you ready?
Go ahead.
Is the leading receiver on the Texans a guy that took a snap for the Texans in 2022?
I think
because you got Noah Brown,
yeah.
You've got Robert Woods, you've got John Metchie, and you've got Dalton Schultz, and you've got a potential rookie, maybe two, coming in.
It might be Schultz. Schultz might be your leading receiver.
Could be. Yeah.
But because I think a lot of these catches, let's say they don't draft any receiver, right? Mm-hmm. And they have who they have,
right.
Which is probably not going to happen.
Right.
But let's just go with this group right now as is, because it's talk radio, it's conversation, it's March still. I think the catches are spread out. I think assuming Metchie gets healthy, gets to the starting line somehow, plays well, but Metchie playing well could be 60, 50 balls, could be really good season for Metchie.
Right.
Be terrific. I might take it right now.
He's coming off of leukemia.
Yeah, instead of what's behind door number two, I might take that right now. Are you kidding? I mean, because there's a larger health situation here. But we're just talking football.
Right.
Woods, I don't know, 40, 45?
2 years now removed from the ACL tear, which is big.
Yeah.
It's big to think about.
Nico, you know, you mentioned the 33 website, whatever it is. I look at Nico's situation. I get them leaving him out because, hey, you got to prove you can stay on the field, can't make the club in the tub and all that. He'll make the club. And he's really talented. We love Nico.
Yeah.
I think Nico is, he's got A.J. Green type body.
Yes.
Now, I'm not saying he's A.J. Green. I've never said that. But he kind of reminds me of him physically. Mm-hmm. And I really think Nico's got so much potential. He can make some good catches, too. Mm-hmm. But we all have to see him stay out there consistently. If he can give you 13 games, 14 games, that would be huge this year. And he might be the leading receiver. But he still might not. Again, you're spreading the catches out. Then you still have Schultz. They're going to throw the ball to Singletary out of the backfield. They definitely will. You know they will. In this offense, they'll spread it around. Look, we talked about the 49ers yesterday. Look at how they're catches are spread around. Now, things changed with them, especially last year once they got McCaffrey. That skewed everything around because they were definitely going to get him the ball. And the Texans don't have McCaffrey, but they like to throw to the back if they possibly can.
And oh, by the way, Damian Pierce does have great hands. He does have excellent pass-catching ability.
Slowick might be looking at that saying, hey, I've got a guy who can catch the ball. Let's use him more.
Right.
Who knows what he's thinking?
Yeah, no doubt. And now you got Singletary to add in there. Then you add in what's been added on the defensive side. Your original question was, have they done more in the Colts? I don't think there's any question that they've added more positives on their side than the Colts have. And I think the negatives of not bringing back Oboe, not being able to sign Jordan Akins, I think those have been overcome with what else they've done. But let me throw you this.
Okay.
Colts, to me, have not done a whole lot, which scares me, right?
Because they think they have a lot already.
So let me ask you this. How does the question change? Just follow me on this.
Okay.
Stephen Holder of ESPN.com reports that the Colts have not ruled out a pursuit of Ravens quarterback Lamar Jackson.
Yeah. Well, not ruling it out and actually pulling it off are two very different things.
So this is what, in fact, Florio put this on PFT this morning. Although a run at Jackson remains possible for the Colts, per Holder, the team has not taken any substantive steps regarding Jackson. According to the report, team sources have expressed skepticism about an attempt to woo Jackson, but they've not ruled it completely out. If they pull that off, if the Colts pull it off, let's say the Texans, what they've done, let's just call it an 8 right now.
Yeah.
Taking into account what the Colts have done this offseason, if they add Lamar Jackson, does it make it a greater than an 8?
Yes. Yes, it does. It's Lamar Jackson, Johnny. Mm. You put Lamar Jackson on the Colts with Jonathan Taylor and
that
Shane Steichen
sick.
Designing stuff for him after he had Jalen Hurts and he worked with him so well. Now he's got Lamar Jackson to work with. This is going to be ill-inducing for sure in the AFC South. They will be the favorites to win the division, if not a deep run, certainly a deep run in the playoffs, all of that. We thought this about them last year with Matt Ryan, that they were maybe not the favorites to win the division, but certainly it was neck and neck with the Titans.
Yeah.
Now that they added Ryan, I had some doubts about Ryan, but I thought, uh-oh, this could really work for them, finally. But it didn't, and I was so happy about it. The Colts with Lamar Jackson is a very deadly thought. Now, a lot of the collusion accusations and allegations or whatever they are, I look at Lamar Jackson, any team. The guys on SiriusXM, I think I mentioned this yesterday, asked me if the Texans would have considered it. I said what I always say. I'm sure they consider everything.
Yeah, right.
Right? You think about everything. You sit around the conference room table. You talk about all the possibilities. But with Lamar, it's such a big bite. It's 2-1s, and it's that contract. And his own franchise has had great difficulty negotiating an acceptable contract to him. And I understand how Watson has destroyed the market and all of that. He's completely changed the shape of it all. And now it's affecting a guy like Lamar Jackson, who should get as much, if not more, money. Do you think the Colts are going to do that? If they do, it's a Jim Irsay, hey, we need to do this. Because he keeps in mind, I got to sell tickets.
Yeah.
You know, I see what's going to happen to that building if we don't win. That's the house that Manning built. And it just doesn't go as well without Manning or Luck. We all know that. It's a smaller market. They need to drive things. And they want to win. And winning fills the seats. And Lamar Jackson certainly fills the seats. So it wouldn't completely shock me. I think Ballard would be less likely to want to do it. I think Jim Irsay would probably want to do it. Let's roll the dice and go with it.
And I could see Ballard saying, look, boss man, it's your money. I mean, you got to put the money in. You got to put the money in escrow. I'll give up the ones. I mean, Ballard's shown he can give up the ones.
You want the downside, though?
What's the downside?
The downside is, all right, I give away the ones to a guy like Ballard, and I can't speak for him, but I'm imagining this.
Right.
To a guy like Ballard, I get into a situation where I'm pushing the chips to the center of the table, and I'm going Ram-like. I'm effing them picks here, and a lot of money. You know, it's going to be cap issues, all right, to give Lamar the contract he really wants. I lose picks. It's kind of like the situation the Texans were in, and we see what happens if you don't win with everything you push to the center of the table.
But if I'm bleeping in picks, it better be for a quarterback.
Yeah.
I'm okay with that. I don't want to say.
Difference maker.
Yeah. The Rams did it for a corner. They've done it. They did it for other positions. I think they did it for Von Miller, too. And those are premium positions. But to me, if you say bleep them picks for a quarterback, okay. Now I'll get in that discussion with you. But if you want to say bleep them picks for a priority position that's not quarterback, I'm like, can we kind of dial this back a little bit? And I know what we did for Laramie. And I know Laramie has worked out. He's one of the ones that's worked out. He is staying here. Where's Jalen Ramsey going? Mm-hmm. What did Von Miller do? He showed up as a hired gun and got out. So Laramie Tunsil is staying. And I still at that point feel like we could have pulled that off without including a second one in there. So going in there and saying, bleep them picks, yeah, do it for a quarterback. And a quarterback of his stature, that's I'm talking myself in the fact that they could do it. And well, I don't like the fact that it's very quiet right now about this. I just don't like that.
Am I right? Is Lamar Jackson's addition to Indianapolis, does that make them the AFC South favorite for sure?
Yes.
Would that? Okay.
Yes. Even now, over Lawrence.
Put Lamar Jackson on the Titans. Does it do the same thing?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Well, I take it back. I don't know if it automatically does, but here's what I think is
signing. You got Derrick Henry and Lamar Jackson in the backfield. Yikes.
Stop it. Stop it. I can only handle so much. Now, apparently, the Derrick Henry trade rumors are just a big popcorn, you know what. I mean, it's nothing, apparently. They're not. No, we're not getting rid of Derrick Henry. So, yeah, Lamar Jackson and Derrick Henry. Tennessee. I think the Colts roster right now, with all that has gone on in Tennessee, I don't see Tennessee doing it, because I think Tennessee's on the verge of saying, look, let's quietly reset this thing.
Yeah.
And
they've added some pieces, though.
But not great pieces.
No, they're not doing the Texans are doing.
Good pieces, but right. Not like, wow. To me, it's been more about the subtractions. Luan released, Ben Jones released. I mean, the offensive line still hasn't been fixed, but they've added back to the offensive line. I'm trying to remember who they added somebody in the offensive line that was, it escapes me.
Andre Dillard. Weren't the Texans supposed to draft him, according to the fans?
Yeah, I wanted him too. I like Andre Dillard. They had Daniel Brunskill from San Francisco, obviously the Rand Carthon thing. Here's the thing about adding Lamar. To me, if you're the Colts or the Titans, and this is not a good thing, but if I'm a player in the Titans or the Colts and I see my organization go all in to go get Lamar Jackson, take, for instance, Jeffrey Simmons. Like, I know everybody wants their paper. I know that. I don't know they want the bag. I get all that. But Jeffrey Simmons knows the Titans will pay him.
Yeah.
They'll pay him. It's a matter of, does he want to come back to this? But then all of a sudden you see Lamar Jackson added, and you're like, yo, I'm in. Kevin Byard, they asked him to take a pay cut. Now, does he want to request a trade and all that? Well, what if Lamar Jackson's coming in?
Mm.
Is he going to want to do that? Mm. Same thing with the Colts. If you have impending free agents or your own free agents and you're, you know, haggling a little bit and the guy's deciding, well, do I want to go here or do I want to go there? Well, dang it. They just signed Lamar Jackson. I want to be there. I definitely want to be there. It's kind of the same thing with the Texans seeing Schultz and Singletary added, I think, kind of caught the attention of people, maybe impending free agents, about, hey, wait a second. Maybe not this year, but, hey, I need to watch this and kind of see how this works out, because maybe that's an option, because they're starting to add a few things there. You add Lamar Jackson to the mix in Indianapolis or Tennessee, I think you get your own free agents to start getting excited about the place, and I think you get impending free agents to get excited about coming there. Now, Lamar may take all the money, but at that point, you can figure it out.
Do you know we have spent We have spent a lot of time talking about him. He is God's latest gift to talk radio.
Yeah,
Lamar Jackson.
That's true.
But I'll ask you one more here on him. You put him on the Texans. Are the Texans the favorites in the division?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
With everything they've added.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Well, I know people will. I know people want to be in a wait and see mode.
Yeah, well, everything's wait and see.
But if we get him, that means the Colts and Titans aren't getting him.
Yep.
That also means that we're going toe-to-toe with the Jaguars with Lamar, Damian Pierce, and Devin Singletary with Dalton Schultz. Because to me, Dalton Schultz is a key for Lamar. I mean, how many throws did Mark Andrews get during a game?
Oh, yeah.
That's what Dalton Schultz ends up doing. I mean, whew.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it would be close. I mean, the Jaguars fan would be like, nah, you haven't proved it yet. Well, you're about to see. That isn't happening. That's right. Not happening.
Right.
But
Lamar might say, I threw a lot to Andrews because he's awesome and I needed more receivers.
Yeah, yeah.
I needed more receiver help.
Yeah, no doubt. But at that point, if I'm Dalton Schultz, I'm like, I'm catching 80 passes this year.
Yeah, yeah. No, he likes it. Yeah, he would like it.
I'll take it. But yeah, I think Lamar to any of the three other teams not named Jacksonville, yeah, I think it would make us, if anything, if it didn't make us the favorite, I think everybody would be like, yo, Houston just became very, very dangerous.
Yeah. Here's the thing. We need to keep Lamar out of the division.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, unless that's a must. Guess to the Texans for a third rounder.
Stay in Baltimore. We'll face you this year up in Baltimore. That's fine.
Hey, go to that Cam Newton workout at Auburn and maybe never mind.
That's right.
Johnny, we were doing this exercise to see what the other teams have done in the division, the other opponents. We're going to run out of segment. But the Jacksonville Jaguars, they've added some, well, what are they at? Calvin Ridley, he comes back. That's a nice addition for them.
Yeah, they traded for him last year. That was actually a brilliant move. They traded for him last year while he was suspended.
It's like a Larry Bird draft move.
And then they reinstated him in February to the league. And
That's a big addition.
That's a huge addition.
They have weapons. Ingram's back. That was a big weapon for them.
Yeah.
To have Ingram franchised.
To get him back for just another year, keep growing. I mean, I think they'll eventually get a long-term deal done. He has talked about how much he wants to be in Jacksonville, which you didn't hear for a long time. Hey, I want to stay in Jacksonville. No, he wants to stay in Jacksonville. So I think they'll get a long-term deal done with him. Boy, I don't like that.
So you could say, the Texans have done a lot more addition to their team,
right.
A lot more adding of talent to their team than the Jags have to theirs. But the Jags were already there. They're the defending champions right now.
But where's the one? What's the one area though you don't want to see players pulled away from?
Yeah,
and they lost Juwan Taylor.
That's a loss.
A bigger loss than people are letting on.
Well, I think the better your quarterback is, the more established he is. And I wouldn't call Trevor Lawrence totally established, but he's certainly on his way up to being one of the better guys in the league, one of the best guys in the league, unless he gets derailed, like I think he will. Is that wishful thinking talking?
Hope?
Was that inside voice or outside?
Did you say
voice?
Hope?
Yeah. So. I think the better your quarterback is, the more confident you are that his ability can make up for some issues or development, I should say, along the offensive line. Mm-hmm. We can afford to develop this guy because our quarterback's good. He'll get rid of the ball. He knows how to take care of things. They'll play better because he's better.
Yeah.
You know, the Brady effect that he had on the line in New England, right?
Right.
Some of those guys go other places. They're not quite as good, but Shaq Mason is. So that's nice. Mm-hmm. But we've seen it before with other players with them. You see what happens with Mahomes and the shifting. You know, look, they've reset the line, 2.5 times since he started?
Yeah.
And they're still going strong here, coming off a title.
Yeah,
so
it's amazing.
That happens with good quarterbacks.
They had an offensive line in 19 for the Chiefs, then totally reset it in 21, and now they're resetting the outside yet again.
Yeah.
It's fascinating in some sense to think about. I mean, fascinating to think what they've been able to do.
With Mahomes there, it's going to be like Brady in New England in that we always talk about this. The players around change, and it feels like it's the same team, but it's really not. You just see that one guy there, maybe a couple of others like Kelsey and the coach. And as long as you have that nucleus, players around them change, and it feels like the same team, but it's a different squad. You have to roll it over. They understand this. Andy Reid understands this as well as anybody in football, and they're doing that. And look, the Jags aren't doing that yet, but Bill O'Brien said it. Look, every year is different. Yeah. Every team is going to be different every year. Nick Caserio certainly understands this. And the Texans have been very different in 2020, 21, 22. And here they are again and looking as good as they've looked in a long time on paper heading into the draft.
Yeah, no doubt. If you want to check out what I wrote about each team, go to HoustonTexans.com. Go find the Harris Hits and you'll find the Daily Brew from Friday. And you'll see I came up with three significant additions or deletions from each team, significant impact moves each team that the Texans face. So it's 14 opponents? Is that 14 opponents? 14 opponents, right?
Because
three division.
That sounds right.
That sounds about right. So go check that out and you can see what impact moves I said each team has made to this point. Also, coming up next, a guy that I have a history with, sat down with Mark. And this is fun. Max Starks, former offensive lineman of Pittsburgh Steelers, next right here on Texans All Access.
And it just gets busier here in Houston for you Houston Texans. Welcome back to Texans All Access. I'm your host, Sean Harris, football analyst. Texans made official today. A couple of signings you already knew about, Dieter and Singletary. But also today, Corey Littleton, linebacker, Pro Bowler in 2018. Oh, yes, I know, 5 years ago with the Rams, but he's played with the Raiders. He has stayed consistent throughout the league. Very good cover linebacker. But Corey Littleton added to the Texans linebacking group. Wow. That was three positions that were announced today with Littleton linebacker, with Dieter at center, guard, and Singletary at running back. Man, three positions definitely of need. Adding to the mix with veterans that have done it and been successful. Good to see that for the Texans. So, things are staying busy in H-Town. Nick Caserio and his staff, Nico Ryan's getting things done for your Texans. Now, our next guest is someone that I actually have a history with. Now, I missed out on the opportunity because I was over in the bowl watching workouts, and Mark was back doing work and doing interviews. And one table in front of us was the Pittsburgh Steelers table. Now, every team has a table, basically. Unlike in 2015, there were like eight tables and eight teams. That was it. And it's grown and grown and grown and grown. So the Steelers were there, and Max Starks was an offensive lineman for them, played for them for a while, played at the University of Florida, but he also played Lake Highland Prep High School in Orlando. I bring that up because I coached against Max Starks. Now, Max Starks might be the largest human being you've ever seen. DeJuan Jones has gone to number one. Ohio State tackle, who was in this draft, Max Starks, now is number two. But when I was in my first year high school coaching, my first year as head coach, we got the film to play Lake Highland Prep. And as I'm watching it, I could see that the two tackles are pretty big. I'm like, that guy's probably 240, that guy's 270. So we go to the game, and I see the other tackle walk on the field, and like, he's almost 300 pounds. I'm like, if he's that big, then how big is, oh my God, that kid, who's a junior, 16 years old, Max Starks, 6'8", 350, and can move. Ended up playing in the league. He's also Travis Johnson's cousin. So last year at the Combine, I finally got a chance to tell Max Starks the story of actually playing against him. And so we chatted for about an hour, and he told me all about his relationship to his cousin, Travis Johnson. And so I got the whole recruiting story, et cetera. Well, Mark had a chance to sit down with Max Starks, and it was a lot of fun. Take a listen.
It's Max Starks, former Pittsburgh Steeler. And current Pittsburgh Steeler, really. You're always a Steeler,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, once a Steeler, always a Steeler, right? Some capacity.
And you're always on the air with the Steeler Nation radio that people can hear in Pittsburgh and everywhere, really, digitally.
Yeah, no, so we go on air, and then, you know, there is no off season now with the NFL.
Of course.
And so when I'm not working for them, you know, I work for SXM as well. So I'm always broadcasting.
Absolutely. All right, so let's get into some nuances here because the Texans have Laramie Tunsil and Titus Howard at tackle, right?
Yes.
And you played for the Steelers at a time when the Texans broke in Dwayne Brown at tackle in 08, the opener. It was rough for him. Sure. And I want to go here with you because Dwayne told me that it takes 3 or 4 years to really figure out what you're doing on the O-line. And I think fans might get impatient with offensive linemen in particular, the development it takes. Can you speak to that a little bit, how long it took you to really get going in your career and feel really comfortable?
Well, you know, I mean, Dwayne's absolutely right. And Dwayne is a good buddy and, mm-hmm. you know, and a guy that you look at, his career just – I mean, was a stalwart, I mean, from day one. But he's right. Like, a lot of it, you depend on your athleticism, mm-hmm. and you kind of trust the guy next to you early on in your career to really get yourself going because everything's coming at you 100 miles an hour. And you never really – it's like drinking water out of a fire hose, right? You know,
yeah.
Because especially if you're a day one starter, like Dwayne was projected, and like you expect a lot of guys that you're going to draft in the first round,
right.
He's got to start right now. I need him now. It's a microwave society.
Yep.
And for a lot of guys, it's, okay, how do I fit into the scheme? How do I fit the personality groups? Because offensive line is different than any other position. All five guys across the board have to be on the same page mm-hmm. and operate. I know you say, oh, well, an offense or a defense, hey, everybody has to be on the same page. No. You can freestyle a little bit, right?
Right.
Like, you know, I had Troy Polamalu, right? You know, Troy would do whatever Troy wanted to do mm-hmm. within the – so you're just like, okay, I just need to do my job. Offensive line, we've got to communicate, and how we pass that communication amongst each other every single snap matters. And do I feel comfortable that if I'm yelling a play call or a deuce or a double or whatever the responsibility is, the D lineman by the second quarter has already picked up all my keys. So now how do we non-verbally communicate? How do we get the nuances to think like, oh, we both see the same thing. We know what we're supposed to do, so we don't need to talk. Like, that takes about 2 to 3 years. And if you ever notice any great offensive lines, they have to play together for about 2-3 years before you call them great. Like,
right.
When people talked about the Dallas line, then you look at now what Philadelphia's offensive line is like.
Mm-hmm.
Like, those guys have played together for 3 years. And
okay.
So you get the proof in the pudding when you have guys who play together. So, but for the development of a tackle specifically, you might want to try and get a guy to right tackle first, right, just to slow it down, get it to 90 miles an hour. Because normally the best pass rusher is not on that side. He's usually on the left side.
Right.
But now in today's NFL, that's not the case, right? T.J. Watt, Nick Bosa, even Hassan Reddick, they come from the opposite. Micah Parsons. Mm-hmm. These guys are now lining up on the right side of the offense and coming off because they're like, that right tackle is not as good as that left tackle. And now you have to develop those guys a lot faster as well. But it's just – it's a terminology and it's a feel. And those mm-hmm. linemen, you don't mature into your adult body as an offensive lineman till about 26 years old. And that's where you see the sweet spot and when you're seeing guys really start to get it mm-hmm. is right around there. So if you get a 21-year-old offensive lineman – he's still not mentally ready right. for what this is as a job and a profession. So that's why you usually want a 22-year-old. You want a guy who's at least a little bit more mature because you got to hit that 26-year-old mark, which is usually at the end of the first contract, right, nowadays.
Right.
Unless you're a first-rounder, then you can get that fifth-year option. But you want to get that guy right there in the middle of his 20s because that's when he has a sense of self, the spatial awareness to go with the athleticism to really be a dominant guy on the edges because you're on the island. You know, interior, you can kind of fake it a little bit. You can roll coverages, make a mic ID to help that weaker guard out, or you can bump a guy in, or you can have a running back release through the A or the B gap in the middle to give him a little bit of a bumper. But at tackle, there is no bumper. I mean, you get a chip from a tight end every once in a while, but – you can't just rely on, I've got to run out of left formation every single time because we don't trust our tackle on the edge.
Right.
You've got to be able to vary it. So it takes time to get into that system.
Max Starks joining us, former Pittsburgh Steeler, among other teams. We won't get into those just right now. But along those lines, Max, is it harder than ever in the sense that the way the offseason is constructed now, I mean, no hitting, obviously, and in training camp, very little, and you're wearing the Guardian helmets and everything, and I don't know how you get better then, but really in training camp, you can start to hit a little bit, but you guys need to hit, right? Your group needs to hit to get better, and I've heard a lot of people say, hey, it might not take till week four in the regular season because that's when the real action begins.
Yeah, it might not take till week four, and if, you know, certain teams, you know, this past year, a lot of offensive lines did not go out there together and play in the preseason, because preseason is also very formidable to work out the kinks. Our group for the Steelers played all the preseason together.
Okay.
So they were – because they were just so new. I mean, we had two new guys there at center and right guard, and then we also had a competition at the left guard position, and then it was both of our tackles. Our left tackle is a second-year guy, Dan Moore, over there from Texas A&M. Mm-hmm. And then we had Chuks Okorafor, who was making the move because we were trying to play him at left, moved him back over to right. So you had five guys working together for the first time. So you really needed to work them out. But then you see Cincinnati brought in free agents, right. had a young rookie. None of them played together till week one when they saw the Steelers. Mm. And we saw how that maturation process played
out.
Took a while for that. And so if you're going to have new pieces, if you're going to roll in and try and put in a new system, it's going to take, I would say, week four to week six easily before you can really see the guys working together on the double team blocks, communicating, passing off stunts that the defense might do. It's going to be sloppy at the beginning of the season. And you're right, you don't get to hit. So now a lot more onus is put on the off-season facilities that guys train at. Mm-hmm. Like where you go to train in the off-season matters. Are you around other offensive linemen? You know, I work also at a place called AMDG Sports out in Phoenix, and that's O-line only. So we literally have 26 offensive linemen in the same gym doing the stuff together. And they might be on different teams, but they get to work the double team blocks together on the pads. They get to work skill acquisition. Like you'll have 10 tackles working on pass pro sets together. Because a lot of the teaching has been taken out of that offseason, like you said, with the no contact, the limited meeting time. You know, you have 20 hours a week or something like that. You're allowed to be on the field. And then when the coach is not there, guys are going to go on the field. We know that's not happening.
O-line is so much fun to practice.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, man, I can't wait to go out there and hit a pad with my buddy holding it. So, you know, we've decided that you have to take that curve somewhere else.
Uh-huh.
And so now you start to see specialized gyms. You know, you talk about the DB facility that Ryan Clark runs down in Louisiana where all the DBs like to go down and train. So you're getting these specialized places around the country where guys can go because you need that extra help. You need that extra physicality as an offensive lineman. You don't want the first time you hit a guy on a double team to be in training camp. and with that what I call the great kazoo helmet. You know, yeah, from the Flintstones, right?
That's a dated reference, Max, but
yeah,
I get it.
Yeah, see,
I
you understand it, so I'm hopefully some of your guys listening in and women understand what we just said. But those helmets also, you know, and this is my personal opinion, coming from an era where we didn't use those, it leads to bad habits. Mm-hmm. And we saw early on in the season, like, a lot of guys leading with their head because you had that guardian cap as a buffer, you know, and that's the one thing where I'm like, it's great for special teams.
Yeah.
Right, for guys running off on kickoff coverage and everything else, it makes sense because of the high velocity impacts. It decreases it.
Right.
But if you're wearing it in practice as an offensive and defensive lineman, I can now butt with my head and I don't feel it.
Yeah.
So that leads to a lot of guys leading with their head early on. So I wish that was something where I get the overall safety and it minimizes 40% of the concussions that happen in training camp, but it doesn't have any benefit in the regular season because guys know how to practice by then.
Right.
So it's a gift and a curse with that guardian cap, but you still need the physicality as a lineman.
Max Starks joining us, two-time Super Bowl champion. All right, so you were part of the team that broke in Ben Roethlisberger, right?
Yeah.
And you also observed the breaking in of Kenny Pickett last year.
Yes.
And I don't know what the Texans are going to do a quarterback as we speak here, but if they have to break in a new quarterback, that's kind of a painful process in some cases. How do you think it went with Pickett? Because it looked good at the end of the year. It looked like he really upped his game. You had some emotional and meaningful victories toward the end of the year.
Well, I think with any young guy coming in, because, right, I came in with Ben. We were drafted together. Mm-hmm. And – Ben started on the depth chart as number four going into training camp. So you look at – he starts out at number four. Charlie Batch, who's our two, breaks his collarbone in camp.
Okay.
Now he moves up to number three. Now Brian St. Pierre gets sick, and now Brian St. Pierre is now off, and now Ben's number two going into week one.
Tommy Maddox.
Tommy Maddox is there. Yeah. We get into week two down in Baltimore. Tommy gets knocked out by that ferocious Ravens defense. And now Ben's asked to step in the second half of the game and almost wins it back. But we get in and we're like, oh, man, okay, this is our starter after week two is the rookie first-round pick. Everybody's happy. But we also knew we have to limit the exposure of Ben. The one thing that was good, when Ben got drafted, the defense was already there. We had a top defense at that time. We had a young Troy Polamalu that was breaking in. He was in year two at that point. But you had Chad Scott on one side, Deshae Townsend on the other, Joey Porter, Clark Hagans, Kimo Von Olhoffen, Aaron Smith, Casey Hampton, and James Ferrier and Larry Foote. So we had a pretty good – and Chris Hope was our other safety.
Jeez.
We had a pretty good defense in place. And then offensively, yes, they were coming off of a bad year, but yet Marvell Smith, Alan Faneca, and Jeff Hardings, that's a very veteran left side. And then Kedrick Vincent and Oliver Ross were journeyman older linemen, seventh and eighth year in the league. That comprised your starting line. And Jerome Bettis and Deuce Staley in the backfield. Plaxico on one edge, Hines on the other, Antoine Randall is your other slot receiver. So everything was in place to insert quarterback here.
Right.
And so what happened was we said, okay, Ben, you're only going to throw the ball no more than 20 times a game. Manage those 20. You can do whatever you want. We're going to run the ball, and we're going to play tough defense. And that really insulated and helped Ben grow as a quarterback as he went through the process because it was like, we want you to be yourself. And we saw the Ben that can shake off a sack from, like, you know, a big dude, Darrell Suggs, coming around the edge. But he also knew that, okay, I'm going to get these two or three reads 20 times a game. Other than that, trust the offensive line to run the football. And that's how we were able to win early on. And then you saw Ben probably about year four really come into his own, to where he was running the offense himself. Him and Bruce Arians created more of a passing game that suited his strengths. And you brought in guys to facilitate that. And you saw us become more of a pro-style offense. But we were a very run-heavy offense early on to compensate for Ben and make sure that gave him the time to mature into that position.
Man, that was great stuff from Max Starks talking about their rise with the Steelers and so much good stuff there with Mark Vandermeer as well. All right, when we get back, Drew Doherty caught up with a guy who is absolutely a blast to talk to, Joey Molinaro, doing impressions next on Texans All Access. What's up, everybody? One final segment of this edition of Texans All Access on a wonderful Tuesday evening. Hope you're well wherever you are. I am your host, John Harris, football analyst, sideline reporter. It's time to have a laugh, and not at my or Mark's expense either. Joey Molinaro, you see him on Twitter. He does tremendous impressions. And Drew had a chance to catch up with him. We saw him in Indy and some good stuff here, especially when Nick Saban talks about Bryce Young.
Well, that's kind of your prerogative, because I don't coach that team. I coach my team and my program. So you want to take care of that, that's fine. I'll say he's a fine player. Love Bryce. He did a lot of good things for us. But I ain't going to sit here and make the draft pick for you. All right? That's your program.
You're intimidating me. Because you're intimidating me. And I love your story about when you did finally see – what was that like?
It
was, just take me back to that instance.
It was a whole realm of emotions,
when
man.
Was this, by the way, just for those that don't know?
Beginning of February 2022. Okay. At the Senior Bowl in Mobile.
Okay.
I was a part of this summit at the Sanger Theater down there. Me, Kirk Herbstreit, Nick Saban. At the time, the head coach of Auburn, Brian Harsin.
Yeah.
So, you know, we had this whole big synergy of their promoting, you know, Joey's going to MC and Coach Saban's going to be there and Herbie's there. Big deal. Something great. Like, I'm actually finally going to get to meet him. Because it's all been hearsay. Like, his daughter has been like, oh, I show it to him all the time. He loves the videos. Oh, my mom loves the videos. Like, you know, never met the man. I'm like, finally going to get to meet him. Comes down. It's that night. We're running 40 minutes over. The man's pissed.
Oh,
the man is absolutely fuming because he's already on a recruiting trip. It's taking time out of his recruiting trail. So I'm backstage and I'm seeing him from me to Mark there, and he's pacing, what like he does on the sidelines, like when you know they're only up by like 35 on Troy.
So what's
in the
that do to
quarter.
You? What's that do to you? Knowing the situation you're in, because you've got to juggle all this other stuff too.
Right, and like I think I can put myself in his headspace pretty well, right? And so I'm like, this is not a good time to go talk to him because he's just doing that slow walk. And I'm like, okay, I'm not gonna let this moment pass.
Right.
He gets off the stage finally. They're all wrapped up. They're done. He's coming over, walking towards me. I'm like, this is it. I'm going to be the first one right as he gets off stage. I'm just going to introduce myself, and hopefully it registers. Went, introduced myself, did not register.
Oh.
he had his handlers around him. I shook his hand. He didn't even make eye contact with me, and he just dropped the, and then just walked away, never saw him again. And my wife was like, you kind of make him out to seem like a bad guy. I'm not listen. He's in Mobile, Alabama, the heart of, right? I mean, the fans, right? Like, he needed to get out of there. So he didn't have time to just, like, stop and chit-chat, or else he would have gotten bombarded. So I understand. It's just pretty hilarious and, I think, on point for the personality that I portray in my impression of him.
Right.
That he just don't have time.
That is a fantastic impression of Saban by Joey Molinaro, and that is 100% a number of people's experience with Nick Saban. He just doesn't have time if it doesn't contribute to winning. I feel like I've heard that before. All right, big thanks to Joey, to Drew, to Max Starks, to Mark, to all of you, to my man Chris Santiago. We'll see y'all tomorrow, and as always, go Texans.